Consumer Protection for the Oregon State Legislature to order. It is Monday, May 21st, 2007. Today we have scheduled Senate Bill 523A public hearing. And Steve, would you give us a description of Senate Bill 523A, please?
Thank you, Chair Holvey.
Maybe I'll open a public hearing first. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 523.
Senate Bill 523A requires an insurer, before recommending that a particular motor vehicle repair shop make repairs to the insured's motor vehicle, requires the insurer to inform the insured of the insured's right to select a repair shop of the insured's choice.
And committee, there is an A2 amendment that's been distributed, so I want you to pay attention to that. And we're not going to move this bill today. So first up, I'd like to have Jim Marr, Tom Brown, I think, and Jim Brown. Could be Tim and Tom. Tim and Jim? Tom and Jim?
Or Jerry. Is it Jerry? Tom and Jerry.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. If you could start out by identifying yourself for the record and anybody you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Marr. For the record, I am here representing the sponsors of the bill. Senate Bill 523 is a good consumer bill. It was worked on extensively in the Senate. The bill we brought to the Senate Commerce Committee was a little bit tougher from our perspective. It would have restricted a referral on the part of the insurance company unless the claimant specifically requested a referral. The chairman was very clear that he wasn't comfortable with that more restrictive language, if you will, and what we ended up with was a bill that requires insurance companies to notify claimants of existing Oregon statute. We have a very progressive law on the books, ORS 746-280, which in effect prohibits an insurance company from requiring where a claimant is going to get their car repaired under a legal, valid insurance claim. This bill is a good bill because, as Senator Monroe said on the floor of the Senate, not everybody knows the law. Not everybody knows their rights here, and that's at the heart of this bill. We urge you to give it a good hard look, and this is a pro-consumer bill. It potentially affects everybody who owns a motor vehicle or rides in a motor vehicle, and it ensures that Oregonians are notified that they remain in the remain in control of the choice of their repair shop, even if they do get a referral and go ahead and get it fixed at a shop that the insurance company may recommend or may prefer. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
My name is Tom Brown. I'm from Madras. I own a collision repair shop there, Coastward Collision Repair. I've got you an information packet there, so I won't go into any depth of the information that's in there, just a brief recap. In the beginning of it is my personal presentation, and these are true facts. Also in there are resolutions from the City of Madras and Jefferson County, and both of these entities support the bill. There are people on the committee and the commission that have been through this process and know how intimidating the insurance industry can be in directing where you do. They considered it a no-brainer. There's also an ORS statute in there requiring certified parts that are not OEM to be put on the cars. Some of the insurance companies require a certain percentage of Chinese import parts to be installed on your vehicle. This degrades the vehicle. I am a victim of that. I bought an 01 pickup. One headlight wouldn't work quite right, so I changed the bulbs in it. Still didn't work quite right, so I went to adjust them, and when I adjusted the light, I found the adjusting mechanism's different. It had one Chinese headlight in it. Now I'm going to have to buy another headlight. The insurance companies say, well, they guarantee these parts as long as you have the car. But what about the next person? And when you're paying $25,000, $30,000 for a used vehicle these days, and it comes with parts that are not OEM like you expect them to be, this is something that needs to be addressed. There's a letter from Joe Enders, a towing company, and he's talking about the...
Just a minute. Can you explain what OEM... I mean, that's an acronym that...
Original equipment.
...that we may not all be familiar with, and I'm being one of them.
I apologize. Original equipment. You've got a Ford, and it comes with a Ford fender, Ford bumper, Ford headlight. Under some of the contracts with the contracts with the insurance companies, you're required to install what they call an aftermarket part. Now, these aftermarket parts are imported from Taiwan. They are intended to be less expensive, and they are not of the quality as required by that statute. And that statute says that it needs to be certified to be equal to in form, fit, and function. And these import parts are not.
Mr. Chair, it's
Rep. Riley.
It's original equipment manufacturer. The manufacturer of the original part.
Thank you.
Some of the companies right now are requiring Taiwan parts to go on an 06, say a Blazer. Well, in 2 years, that Blazer is still going to be worth $20,000, and you're not going to get it in the condition that you really expect it to be, and that you have the right to expect it to be. Does that help? Okay. A letter from Joe Enders, a tow company, talking about towing vehicles to Redmond for Progressive Insurance, that the vehicle owner really didn't understand that his vehicle was leaving town. There's letters between David Mickelson, one from him, one with emails between him and the insurance company, saying that if they could take it to Redmond, they could manage the claim better. But it wasn't an economic thing. And next you'll find emails between myself and a Progressive appraiser stating that some of the operations that we do that are required to provide a quality finished product, their contract shops don't get paid for doing, and so we shouldn't get paid for doing it. Although they're required things like masking off the inside of the car so overspray doesn't go all over it. They tell me that we're not going to pay you for doing that. And this confirms that in their writing. There's an email from High Desert Claims, again with Progressive, talking about the insurance company requiring him to put the aftermarket parts on a car. And at that point, that car was 2 years old. There's an article from the Bend Bulletin that talks about insurance companies meddling in the business, and it's a nationwide problem. It's the problem they call with the mom-and-pop shops. We're having a hard time taking care of our customers in the way that they deserve to be taken care of. There's a letter from State Farm, and again talking about how you can have your car fixed wherever you want, but there may be problems, and we may not be able to work with these people, and if you took it to our place, it would be better. A letter from Terry Hanlon from Miller Ford, again talking about the lack of ability to develop the customer base. You advertise, you work within the community, and yet when a person has a problem, they're told you need to take your car to our authorized shop in Redmond rather than have it repaired in Madras. There's a copy from my garage keeper's liability, a letter I sent to my agent stating that if I repair a car to an insurance company standard, and it's not quite right, but that's how they wanted it done, and I am sued for that, will I be covered? And the answer is no, I will not be covered, because I did what I knew better than to do, even though that was the direction I got from the insurance company. I still won't be covered. And so in conclusion, what brought us here is there is a problem, and the problem really needs to be addressed. We've taken days off, a lot of us. We spent time and money to be here and to inform you folks. And it hasn't been by accident. The problems exist in that it stops business in the normal sense, where some of us, we would really like to work with our customer base to take care of them, and at the same time, the insurance industry is telling them you need to take it somewhere else. It very limits our normal business relations. The other thing is, there's other people here to tell you that there really isn't a problem. And these people are being paid to come tell you that. They're paid messengers. There is a problem, and the only way that this problem will begin to be solved is with the help of the legislature. Oregon has always had a reputation of being consumer-oriented, and this is a chance to really help the consumer out, because they're definitely in need. So I thank you, gentlemen, ladies, for your time.
Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony next, please.
Good afternoon. I am Jim Brown. I am from Madras, representing Madras Body and Glass in Madras, Oregon. Same as Tom here. No relation between us. But we do participate in the same endeavors. I'm here to ask you for this, your support for this bill. In a small collision repair shop in a town the size of mine, this is going to have a very far-reaching impact on my business. It's not only going to affect my business, but those businesses that I select to do my purchasing from for the products that I do repairs, as well as the consumers and all the other collision repair shops in the state. And what I've come to see is over the years is these direct repair facilities is what I'll refer to them as, that have contracts with the insurance companies. And they are becoming very much more commonplace now than they ever have been in the past. And the reasoning for this is for the economical benefits of the insurance industry. And I believe that is the only purpose of that, is for their bottom line, for their shareholders. Not for their insureds, not for their customers, and not for the repairers. When this DRP relationship is becoming large enough now to where there's multiple ways that they can enact one of their insureds or a claimant to their insurance company into this scenario, the first being the call of the 800 numbers or the call centers that these insurance companies have. And, you know, an example of this will be a customer of my facilities have called into their 800 number, which happens to be in Missouri. And they're referred to your zip code. Okay, the nearest shop to you is in Redmond. Okay, there's a 32-mile one-way trip for this customer, time off work, things of that nature. Very, very unconsumer-friendly. And the other way will be if they already know they want a local facility to do repair works on their vehicle, said insurance companies, whichever they are, will elect to send out one of their representatives to estimate, document the damage on the vehicle, and everything of that nature that's included with the claim. At that time, I have had my customers raked over the coals, so to speak, to get them to go to where the insurance company wants them to take their car. Now, out of some of this, a lot of the things that I do say is some of the customers that I have had, I've had discussions with in the past, so they know their rights as a motorist, and they'll say they want us to do the repair work on their vehicle. When they're told that, when they tell that to the insurance company, they will say any sort of thing to keep them from coming to our facilities. And these are very wide-ranging, but first off will be, I'm not on their program. Well, very few shops are on their program because not all of us want to give them concessions to be on that program. will be hard to work with because we are independents and we like to run our business the way our business needs to be run, not the way the insurance company thinks I should run my business. They won't guarantee my work. Well, in the reality of the situation, I've yet to see an insurance company repair or guarantee repair. It always falls back onto the repairing facility, and those companies that do sign contracts with these insurance companies indemnify them from any loss if they are sued. So it doesn't make a difference whether they say they're going to guarantee it or if they're not anyway. So, and even to the point where I have had several customers tell me that their adjusters and or estimators have called all of the shops in my town a quote-unquote rip-off. That is not right. That's telling me there is way too much power that these companies have, and they're getting away with it. It's time to stop. So, basically, this is a no-win scenario for everybody except for the insurance industry. And I agree with Tom. You know, I do have a lot more to say, but I don't want to duplicate basically what he's saying in some of the literature that he's going to provide for you. But this is very, very far-reaching in our industry. And those of you that have rural areas in your district, this is extremely important for us to make sure that the work is not pulled out of our towns and taken somewhere else for their buck. If they're allowed to sell their services in my town, they should pay some of it back.
Thank you
for your time. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee of these gentlemen? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Kind of like Daryl, and Larry. Mr. Brown, Mr. Moore. Could you just explain to me what happened to the estimate business? I mean, don't any of these require, I know our company required it, and we were the second largest trucking company in the state of Oregon, so I can't imagine why somebody needing a repair for a very damaged car, why an insurance company wouldn't want to see three estimates. Or
well, I have
at least
major
two.
Heartburn over this issue as well.
Okay.
Each shop should have its own estimator, and I'm pretty sure we all do. And anymore, in my position at my shop, I'm getting estimates where the insurance company will send out a representative to estimate the vehicle from, say, and I'll use the three worst ones that I have to deal with, Safeco, Progressive, and Farmers. They will not recognize my estimate. Even though I am a professional repairman, I am certified in estimating. I have schooling on top of schooling. I have years upon years of practical hands-on training. I know what I'm talking about more than their estimator does. And they will throw it in the wastebasket. And I am expected to work off of their estimate, which is 9 times out of 10 extremely poor and substandard to the industry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
The insurance company's estimate?
Correct. The one
you're
that
talking
they
about,
provide.
They provide
and say,
one.
Here, fix this car. Here's what you get.
I see. They give you that before you go to your three shops and ask
they
for your estimate?
They try to do that before they come to our three shops for an estimate.
It is.
Correct.
I have one more point on that. In the insurance code, people for years thought they had to go get three estimates.
Yeah.
The insurance code does not require that, nor does any insurance policy issued in the state of Oregon.
Is that right?
The only time the term estimate is in the insurance code is that the repairing facility must provide an estimate that the insurance company can adjust on. And that takes us to a little bit of a different point where these body shops that are contract body shops with the insurance company are actually adjusting the claim. They're acting on behalf of the insurance industry without the credentials to do it. I am a licensed adjuster, so I have a little view in this. But the body shops, I've actually repaired cars that estimate of record came out of a body shop in Redmond. He handled the whole thing, did the pictures, sent in the claim, a check was issued on that without any insurance company representative ever seeing that car. It was adjusted by a body shop. Mm. This is...
Just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And I don't pretend to be technically bright, so but these cars don't, they specialize, I mean, it's a Japanese-made or General Motors or... So do your maintenance shops also specialize in certain types of cars? Or are you... You can work on all. Repair all?
I think all of us.
Like an unlimited repair station for airplanes.
Because in a town our size, you couldn't survive just working on Fords.
I see.
You have to be able to deal with the full spectrum. And each manufacturer has their own parts that are engineered for that vehicle, that are manufactured to particular specifications for that vehicle.
And does the insurance company require you to have so much certification in the categories of the cars you're handling?
They really don't.
They don't?
No. There are some particular certifications through what's called ICAR, Inter-Industry Conference on Collision Repair. It's a national organization that you can take training through. Some of the insurance companies want you to have a certain level of that training to be on their program.
Right.
Some of that training is good, and some of that training you could go through, you sit through the class. At the end of the class, you get a thing that says you were there. It doesn't mean that you're good at it. And being good at it means you've got the years of experience.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, if I could just offer just a brief clarification and I think some information. This is a really complicated issue. Fixing cars is complicated business. Most of us don't know much about it. The insurance industry is a complicated business. You're going to hear a lot about original equipment, manufacturer parts, used parts versus new parts, foreign parts versus original OEM parts. And these gentlemen live it every day. They're out there. If you own a body shop, you want to fix the car to the highest standard. You're also going to hear about direct repair programs in the debate about this bill. We certainly did a little bit. I just want to be clear. Senate Bill 523, as amended, does not get into what kind of parts go on a car, does not preclude, get into the details of fixing a car, and it does not certainly outlaw direct repair programs, which are illegal in Oregon and have been operating in the state. What it does is take our existing law that says you can go wherever you want if the insurance company is fixing a car. And remember, it can be your insurance company because you're fixing your own car, or I ran into you and now my company's going to pay to fix your car, which makes you a third party, of course. And if you've ever dealt with anybody as a third party, you know, things can get a little sticky when you're not the real customer, you're the claimant. That's an issue. But this bill lets people know what the law is in Oregon. And before they make that choice where the car gets fixed, they're perfectly capable under this law, this proposed law, to ask their insurance company for information, for referrals, and then take that information and do whatever they want with it. This bill also says if we as the insurance company give you a referral and you agree to take it, well, there's some language in there that says to the claimant, you have accepted a referral on the part of our company and we back it up. And that's really important according to the Attorney General's letter on this bill. It lets the claimant know that they're still in charge of this repair job. They have prepaid for the repair job with their policy. And this bill, I just want you to think about, it's a very modest proposal. It doesn't get in the way of insurance companies' rights. It certainly enhances consumers' ability to operate in this segment of the marketplace, which the Attorney General's letter to you acknowledges is a very frustrating part of the marketplace for a lot of people because of the reasons that these gentlemen have outlined to you. And it gives people knowledge at the point where they can use the knowledge, and that's right before they make the decision about where to have their car fixed. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the second Mr. Brown, Jim Brown. You mentioned in your testimony and also in your written letter here about the concessions in return for a volume of work, and it's my understanding that those are the direct repair programs.
Correct.
Could you please talk about what those concessions are?
More often than not, when a body shop contracts with an insurance company to be on their DRP program, they're going to enter into a contract to repair vehicles according to that insurance company's guidelines and their standards and practices. Most of the time, in order for these shops to get onto these, it's normal practice and common practice for the shops that are already on these programs to offer concessions to the insurance companies in return for what they're going to do for them. And those will include a discount on labor rates, usually a dollar or two or somewhat more, sometimes below the average market in that area. Reduced storage charges on totaled out vehicles, so there's no payouts by insurance companies on those. They're going to do certain operations that are absolutely necessary to repair a car to industry standards for free and not actually put them on their billing or on their estimates or on their work orders. They just do them, and they'll make it up because they're getting a volume of work instead of billing out for each and every operation that is necessary to repair that car. And I mean, the list could go with little what they would consider nickel and dime operations to them that aren't getting billed for, but are meat and potatoes for a small shop for me, like me. It adds up, and it adds up significantly, and I don't believe I should be penalized for other shops not charging for those.
Thank
I should
you.
Be forced to work for their labor rates.
Follow-up, please?
Follow-up.
It's not technically a follow-up. It's a new question.
A new question, Representative Bonnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Maher, you talked about under this bill, the consumer can still ask for a recommendation. So when the consumer asks for the recommendation, won't the insurance company just give them the DRP list?
I would say in almost all cases, if the consumer said, send me wherever you want, in effect, give me a recommendation, that most insurance companies will choose off of their DRP list. That would be my guess. My point was to make sure that the committee understood that this law certainly doesn't restrict any insurance company's ability to talk to their customers. Certainly, that was the concern of Chairman Brzezinski, that the way we had it before, you could not offer a referral unless they requested one. I think that's how most of you saw the bill earlier this session. So that's where we ended up with. Everybody's free to obtain information. However, under this bill, we can all be sure that the claimants are notified of their rights prior to making this decision. Then they're free to hear about it. And I think that's at the heart of the issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions of these gentlemen? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. It's really not a question, it's a statement.
Oh, statement. Representative
okay.
Nelson.
I just wanted to say I'm impressed that you men are so well prepared and your packets, you know, your effort, so don't go unnoticed.
Thank you.
If I may.
You may.
Okay, thank you. To Representative Brzezinski, the question on the concessions. In my packet, there's an email from, I believe it's Andrea something from Progressive, where I sent her an email. I had billed her for doing some of the operations, such as covering a car. With these things, you have to seal the rest of the car if you're painting a door because you don't want it to get all over.
Mm-hmm.
You have to paint or mask the insides of the panel so you don't want stuff all over it. You polish the car when you're done to bring it back to the standards. And in my conversation with her, she said, well, we're not going to pay for that.
Yeah,
so I sent her an email. I said, my understanding is even though we do this, you're not going to pay us for it. And in her email, she's correct. The contract shops do this without getting paid for it. And we expect you to do that.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either Mr. Brown or both, respecting your well-articulated mission of running your own shops the way you want to run them with your own experience, if you wanted to get on the list of your three most difficult companies, how difficult would that be for you to do, to make those concessions on a large scale?
You want to go first?
I have been approached to be on their programs, and I have refused. Simply, for me, it's more of a principle than anything else. I could probably afford to take one of them on, but not all of them. That's just giving too much money away. But I'm not in business to give them my money. It just doesn't work that way.
And one other point of that, some of these companies won't allow two DRP shops in the town. You can only have one. And one example of that, and this goes back a few years when Jim's dad was running the shop, there was a company in the insurance market, and there was a coin toss to see whether Jim's shop that it was dad running or our shop got to be the DRP. I lost, but that's how good that's how it goes. They weren't allowed to have both of them. Mm-hmm. You could only have one.
Follow up, if I may.
Follow up, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another subject, you guys have followed this bill on the Senate side as well. Are you aware of these dash twos?
Sir, I just checked this morning and wasn't aware of anything that had come to the committee. It looks to me like they require, I mean, this is outside the scope completely of ORS 746-280. It looks like a gut and stuffed.
Thank you.
It's a stuff, not a gut.
Yeah, it's not a gut and stuffed. It doesn't take any of the bill away.
It's a stuff.
Yes, sir.
I was asking either one of these a question.
I know.
Excuse me. I was asking the witnesses and both of these colleagues have responded.
Would you like?
Oh, just lucky.
We're trying to help you. Yeah. We know you need all the help you can get.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. Really appreciate it. I think we're going to move on with some more testimony at this point.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for presenting us that. Next up, I'd like to have Randy Daigle and Daryl Fuller. And while they're approaching, Representative Gilliam, if you could treat the chair with due respect and watch your language, because my wife's in the audience.
I noticed that, and I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Boy, when she leaves.
Maybe you could just leave.
Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Hi. My name is Randy Daigle. I own Lentz Body Shop in Portland, Oregon. I prepared written testimony for the Senate, and I don't know whether you're able to see that. I did write each of you a letter last week, and it's probably in your file on a manila beige-colored envelope with my heading on it. I had to go to Seattle this weekend, so I did not have time to complete written testimony, so I'm going to shoot from the hip, and sometimes I speak better from the hip anyway. Thank you for allowing me to testify here. My company's been in business for 38, 39 years. I bought the company 20 years ago and have seen the DRP direct repair programs come into play. Again, this bill has nothing to do with that. I am involved with some DRPs, and there are some that are not. I've heard questions as to how do you get on them. We have applied to a lot of them, and we're told you can't be part of it because we have somebody else in your zip code. Well, that's really anti-competitive. How do I compete with somebody that else that is on it that they won't allow me to get on it? There is just recently what I read, a 70-30 rule, where 70% of the collision repair that comes out of the top 20 insurance companies are being directed to only 30% of the facilities, of the repair facilities. So when I try to get on a shop or an insurance program, I'm told I can't because for some silly reason they have somebody else in a zip code area, or it's so anti-competitive. We are ICAR trained. We have got all the certification. We've got all the tools, all the equipment. I certainly have no problem with the competition down the road. They're good competition. This will level the playing field. There are lawsuits popping up all over the nation. all over the United States on anti-steering. There's legislation all over the country because of what's happening in the industry. If you think of it this way, Portland Adventist Hospital, a lot of doctors and medical people have their offices around Portland Adventist Hospital. Think what would happen if the insurance industry said, we're only going to let five doctors be part of our repair or part of our program. I mean, so anti-competitive. The consumers wouldn't deal with that. But you go to a doctor a lot more often than a collision shop. The average consumer only has three accidents in their life. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. And I have consumers in my office every day wanting to know, can I come here? What do I do? This just levels that playing field. It is all about consumer choice. I do want to share or answer some of the questions that that were presented earlier on the three estimates. Yes, there was always used to be three estimates. Still, some companies require or ask for three estimates. I've seen consumers come in with three estimates, and then they discard them and say, we still want you to do this or that. Mm-hmm. I started doing body work when I was 15. I continue in my ongoing training, my certification. Yet every day I have insurance personnel come into my office with 2 weeks of training. And they write an estimate, and I can show you statistics to show the cost of that paperwork that's being produced does not anywhere near enclose all of the repairs that are required to return that car back to the pre-accident condition. And so you have to stop and supplement over and over and over. I want to share what's happening with one particular company in this company. Most companies are abiding by the law. When I say most of them are up to the edge. There are some companies that are not. They're being dictatorial with what they're doing. Recently, within the last year and a half, Progressive Insurance built a huge warehouse on 82nd and Foster Road. Excuse me, 82nd and Johnson Creek. They're directing all the consumers to that shop. Here's what happens in that shop. Insurance personnel, uncertified, untrained, take that car apart and put all the parts in a pile. Then they ask only 8 shops are allowed to go into that building and say, yeah, I'll fix that car for the estimate that's been prepared, which oftentimes leaves off many of the repair safety functions that are required to repair that automobile. If I'm part of that program, I'm forced to pay the tow bill to bring that car over to my shop. I'm forced to put it together in the cheapest, most fluid way possible. And that's, you know, we're all into the economic world. We want things done prudently. I understand that. But when it comes to safety items that we're told we cannot do properly, then there's a gray area there. I'm forced to guarantee that I'll have that repair back to that insurance warehouse by 3 o'clock Friday, or they force me to pay the car rental. If there's any hidden damages, unless it's over an X amount, they force me to eat it. Well, here's what's happening with those shops that do that. They shortchange the repair. They shortchange the consumer. I'm getting off track here a little bit, I realize, but what's happening in our industry is the consumer is losing the ability to say what's going to be done with their vehicle, to say what's happening to their automobile. In the same way that would you allow that to happen if you were that your doctor? It's really a very complicated issue here. The consumer's choice has got to be paramount here. I mean, if you want to come to my shop, great, come to me. If you want to go to my competition, God bless you. Good luck. They're good people too. They've got the same issues that we have. But this really boils down to competition and what's good for the consumer. The question on the amendment this morning, this was evidently brought in this morning. I was not aware of it. I don't know whether this was a mistake that's supposed to be a part of this file or not. In my opinion, the second amendment has nothing to do with the bill before us, so I'll let you guys handle all that. I have a lot of things I could share with you. I'm open to questions. Again, I apologize for not having written testimony for you, but I've been out of town for the weekend here.
Thank you. Mr. Fuller.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Northwest Auto Trades Association, trade association representing more than 600 people, a number of them in the collision business. Current law allows customers to have their vehicles repaired anywhere they want. Current law requires the insurance companies to notify their customers that they have the right to repair their vehicles anywhere they want. They have to notify them when the policy is created and any time the policy is renewed. So when you get your renewal packet from your insurance company or when you go out and get an auto insurance policy, part of that policy, I understand, is going to include information that says you can repair your vehicle anywhere you want. Between the time of the policy's inception and the renewal, if you get into an accident, the insurance companies don't have to tell you. The point at which you need that information the most, of course, is when you're in an accident. And the statute doesn't require the insurance company to provide you that information at the time you need it most. So what this bill simply does is require the insurance companies to let you know what the law is if they're going to provide you with recommendations at the time you need the information, which is when you're in an accident, not when you first got the policy when you were 16 years old or had it renewed 6 months ago. So this is a very positive consumer protection bill. It does not limit the insurance company's ability to have agreements with repair facilities, but it does ensure that consumers have the knowledge that they need in order to make the choices on where they want to have their vehicle repaired at the time of the accident. I got a copy of the A2 amendments last Thursday, I believe. And we've had a chance to talk about them in our office. Without commenting on the relative stature of the amendments and what the amendments would do, whether the amendments are good or bad, we do have a concern that this bill was worked real hard on the House side or on the Senate side, that there is an agreement between the repair facilities and the insurance companies on the language of the bill, and I would be concerned that if amendments on other issues were added to the bill, that it would imperil its success ultimately, either on the floor of the House or getting concurrence over on the Senate side, and that the changes that were finally brokered on the Senate side were chaired by the chair of the committee over there. And I don't know if he's had a chance to see these amendments or whether Senator Pozanski would support them. So my only caution to the committee, again, the amendments may be great in terms of their impact. We haven't had a chance to look at them substantively, but we are concerned about the impact they may have in terms of muddling a negotiated agreement that took quite a while to get to. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your words of caution, and we're not moving this bill today so that I can have a chance to speak with the chair on the other side about these proposed amendments and whether or not they're appropriate, I guess, would be a good point, and also to give you and the committee a chance to look at the A2 amendments before we take any action. So my intent would be to carry this bill over till Wednesday, and hopefully that'll be enough time for us to wade through the implications, I suppose. Any questions of these gentlemen? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Daryl, and is it Randy?
Yes.
Thank you both for being here. We're kind of getting it. This is kind of the, I don't know if you have a name for it. Like the Miranda rights, the Fuller rights or something, Mar rights, for people who have been involved in a collision. But if you look at the, well, I don't know, you probably don't want to, but at the A and Gross Senate bill, if you looked at it, 523, where it has the statement in bold and all caps that insurance companies are required to now to give to, I'm guessing, all their policyholders. Oregon law prohibits us from requiring you to get repairs to your vehicle at a particular motor vehicle repair shop. You have the right to select the motor vehicle repair shop of your choice. Kind of back to the question I was asking Brown and Marr. If I had to take my car, I wouldn't want to just take it anywhere. However, I could have a brother-in-law that operates a, you know, shop down the street, and the price could be, you know, really above and beyond what it should be. So I'm just saying, would it solve this problem if y'all sat down with the insurance companies and said, let's come up with some, you know, parameters, what's required as far as certification is, you know, concerned, and then, like, you know, how far can you be on the difference between estimates, 10% or 20%, and also in your locality, not, you know, 100 miles away in Redmond? Could that be done? Because it looks like we kind of are going to have a stalemate here if we don't get together and come up with some, you know, kind of more direction.
May
what do you
answer?
Think?
Yes, Representative Nelson, it's a great question. Thank you very kindly for it. You are correct. If you had your automobile involved in an accident and you wanted to take it to shop A, the insurance company will come out to that shop A and get an agreed negotiated price. Absolutely.
That
goes on every day.
Negotiation.
They do that every day, and that goes on in my facility, which I have some DRP, direct repair program relationships, and we have some that are not. What happens here, when you make that 1-800 phone call to say, I've had an accident, sometimes insurance companies will say, well, take it to shop A. You as a consumer might say, well, I want to go to my brother-in-law's shop B. They will reply and say, oh, I don't know who shop B is. They're not on our program. But they don't tell you they won't allow me to be on that program. So then you say, well, I still want my repair to go to my brother-in-law's shop B. Okay, go ahead and take it. And I've heard games played where, oh, it'll be 2 weeks before we get an adjuster out there. But if you take it to shop A, they can start on it today. But if you stand firm and say, I still want to go to shop B, the adjuster shows up tomorrow. And we get an agreed price, and we go on, we repair the car properly, absolutely. The question on industry standards, the ICAR is Inter-Industry Conference on Auto Collision Repairs, and they work with the manufacturers of these automobiles. They work with the aftermarket, with the collision shops, with the insurance shops. That is a consortium of training that was badly needed in our industry 20 years ago, and it's continued to grow. And most shops, like myself, have been what's called a gold class shop, meaning my employees have X amount of training, X amount per year. They passed and successfully completed this training. We are one of a dozen shops that have been ICAR Gold Class certified for 10 years and more. Uh-huh. And yet, I continue to apply to some of these DRP programs, and I continue to get letters that say, sorry, we're not anymore. Huh. We're not any more shops. So then what happens again when you have an accident? I'm left out of the loop. All this really does is make a level playing field. That's really what it is about.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, I thank you very much for
thank
your
you,
testimony coming forward today
you,
on a Monday.
Okay.
Appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
And next up, I'd like to have Sean Miller and Diane Klund. And perhaps Michael Barber can join them. Is that acceptable?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller here today on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America, representing over 200 property casualty insurance companies doing business in the state of Oregon. And on Senate Bill 523, the bill was carefully worked on the Senate side, and we are agreeable to the original bill, as you see before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but you know, one of the things I wanted to just let the committee know when this debate was occurring on the Senate side is that, you know, as you know, the insurance industry is a highly regulated industry, and the auto repair facilities are not regulated. And so, you know, the business-to-business relationships and negotiations that you've seen and heard discussed in the prior panels are ones that we feel are necessary to protect the consumer. And we feel that, you know, making sure that those automobiles are at least back to pre-loss condition relative to the safety function and appearance is very important to us. And I know it's important to the auto repair facilities that just spoke as well. And so, you know, there's good repair facilities and there's not so good repair facilities, and we want to make sure that our the insurance company's customers are protected in those. And so, you know, I think in as the bill as drafted, you know, we would support that the committee support the bill and ask the committee to move the bill that has been worked on very carefully on the Senate side. As for the Dash A2 amendments, Mr. Chairman, I just received these amendments, I think, Thursday as well. And if you know, the committee remembers back to House Bill 2591, which was dealing with the total loss issue and valuations and how a car is going to be valued. And obviously, we have a lot of opposition to the A2 amendments as, again, a completely separate issue, but I know it does fit the relating clause, and so it's obviously fair game within this bill. But the language as drafted is the identical language to what was considered in House Bill 2591, and so several of the flaws within the amendment that we talked about, and again, I'll defer to Diane and CCC as well to talk about that particular issue, but we would urge that the committee move the bill as drafted and not consider the A2s. And happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a question.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Sean. I want to ask you what date of acceptance means on page 2, line 1.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, this is the statement that I know the repair facilities were interested in making in a written statement when there is a recommendation made and the insured actually accepts the recommendation. We are to send and make sure they receive within 3 days, whether it's mail, electronically, the statement on the back when they accept the recommendation. And so, again, a lot of the discussion on the Senate side was, and we fully support the customer in understanding their rights, and we don't, the steering issue is something that, we do not want to see occurring in the marketplace. So understanding, as Mr. Fuller indicated, when you are in an accident, making sure they understand their rights, they can choose any repair shop they would like. However, if they do want to take a recommendation, they are allowed to do that under this bill. And if they do take that or accept that recommendation, I believe the date of acceptance would be saying, I'm going to take this recommendation. Now, they still receive this written statement. And as I think Mr. Maher indicated, they're still in control of how they want to. They could either go there or they could, I believe, still go wherever they want under that statement. I believe that's what
trying to pin down when the consumer got that recommendation. And then I have a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Bonamici.
Have you seen Representative Riley's plain language bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, no, I have not.
Well, you need to remedy that.
Maybe I'll ask Representative Riley, do you think that this consumer notice on lines 4 through 8 would pass the test under your plain language bill?
What are you reading on?
Page 2.
No. Of the original bill?
No.
The
ingress
bill.
Okay.
The original.
No.
You want the A?
I don't either. Thank you. I think this, if this is a notice that's going to consumers, it may be understandable to people in the industry, but to most consumers, I don't think they'd have a clue what this means, other than the first sentence. The rest of it is one really long sentence that I don't think people would understand.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, I think on the Senate side, and again, Senator Frzanski tried to make it simple, but it does say substantially the following. And so, I think it's in our best interest to make sure that the insured understands. And I think it was pretty clear on both parties that this is the content that you need to make sure that the insured understands. I think it still gives us the ability to alter this language just slightly, and I think it's in our best interest to make sure they understand. So I understand your concern.
There's a book on plain language if you'd like it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I think we all need that in this process.
Speaking of plain
Representative
language.
Gilliam.
Thanks for checking. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. This is a good bill. I like the consumer protection part. I like the leveling the playing field. I like the fairness. But I have to say, I have to warn Mr. Miller and Mr. Fuller that I don't care, how hard they worked in that other body. This is the House Consumer Protection Committee, and we have a chair who is very capable. and able. I think he'll see the flaws of these dash twos. But if he wanted to, and I'm not saying he does, he has the skill, he has the support to even turn around Fred Gerard. And I just think...
Representative Gerard to you.
My dear representative from 17th District, I just think you should be aware of that, and I wanted to say that while Mrs. Holvey was in the room.
Sure glad we got that on the record. Representative Nelson, a real question.
A real question. This statement on page 2, I mean, did the top 10 insurance companies of Oregon sign off on it, Sean?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, on page 2 of the bill?
The A engrossed.
Okay.
I just want to know, how many insurance companies signed off on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I know the insurance companies that I represent, we have a call that it ranges from the larger insurance companies down to our smaller insurance companies, and they've all thought that this language was acceptable, and providing it in a written notice within 3 days was pretty good. Originally, they had 5 days, and the concern that we even brought to the table was a lot of times, and if we do our job right, hopefully your car in an automobile accident is done and fixed within 5 days, and so we still wanted to have them get notice in a proper time frame, and the insurance companies that I've talked to think this is reasonable.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Go
ahead, follow up.
Thank
please.
You. Okay, so this statement says if you agree to use our recommended repair shop, mm-hmm. Where is the statement that says if you disagree, we still will take care of the repair?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, if you look on the first page, you have the statement, which is lines 13 through 16, or 14 through 16, which is the actual statement letting them understand their rights. And if you look down to on line 19, and it says, if an insurer elects to have the motor vehicle repaired at a repair shop other than the shop recommended by the insurer, the insurer may not limit the cost of repairs necessary to return the motor vehicle to pre-loss conditions relative to safety, function, and appearance, other as stated in the insurance policy or allowed by law. So that's the language where you choose to go where you want. That essentially is your right, and we need to adhere to that.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you. Next testifier, please.
Thank you, Chairman Holvey. My name is Diane Klund. I represent Auditex North America, provider of collision estimating and total loss valuation services. And I know we've been here and spoken on. I'm here strictly, by the way, to speak on Amendment A2. I don't have any comments on the bill. I know we've spoken about some of the issues with the amendment and the wording that was in House Bill 2591-1, so I don't want to belabor the same points. I just want to touch on them again and remind the committee what some of those issues were, some of the problems that we see with the amendment. Again, the amendment addresses vehicles in the last five model years, so basically 2001 and newer. About 70% of total losses are 8 model years and older. About 80% of total losses are over 5 model years and older. This amendment doesn't address the handling of those particular claims. Again, there's the issue, which the committee, I believe, had some concerns about and during the last hearing and work session, concerning the fact that there are two different NADA guidebooks. There's a consumer guidebook, and there's one that dealers use in there. So which is the right value? And that may be the case with some of the other published guidebooks as well. Book values are never a local value. They never represent Oregon values. In Oregon, we see a very heavy weighting on trucks. I think over 50% of the total losses in the state of Oregon are trucks. Those are very specific to the local market, be it Central Oregon or Eastern Oregon or the Willamette Valley. Books start with a regional value, and in fact 70% of those book settlements would come from a national guidebook that's only published once every 3 months. So there's an issue with the currency of those values, the seasonality, especially in eastern Oregon. With the snow, you're going to see a big difference in values in four-wheel drives, other vehicles, in a three-month time frame. And, in fact, the amendment does address sources that are published every 2 months. Cars that are 8 model years and older only are company books that are published quarterly. Again, the books don't address two other major issues, and that would be the condition of the vehicle. Average total loss in Oregon is 12 years old, as I spoke to before. Large percentage of the value of that vehicle is based on the condition. You could have rebuilt engines, rebuilt transmissions and clutches in those cars. A computerized database such as Autotex and others in the marketplace are going to place a value on that. The books will not. It also doesn't address about... Computerized databases such as Autotex address about 700 options and equipment that can be in a motor vehicle. Book values take into account about 300. And that can have a big difference on the value. As far as the independent... Yes, our primary client base is insurance companies. However, we do have an office in Milwaukee, Oregon, and we will provide values to consumers, to independent appraisers who choose to come by, have us appraise their vehicle. We do that for stated value policies, for appraisal values. So, and again, I question the independence of a guidebook that's published by a dealership association. Lastly, this last point is there is no precedent in any other state for requiring total loss values be settled on book values. Some of them may require that you consider that as part of the value, but there is no state that absolutely requires only a published guidebook. We believe that that would actually cause complaints to increase. It doesn't appear that complaints are a big issue in the total losses, and I know that's been in question. But if you're not taking into account condition, options, and things that a consumer should get credit for, this is actually going to, I think, increase the amount of complaints. So more and more states are actually going towards the NAIC model wording, which Oregon, in part, has adopted 10 years ago, maybe 10 or so years ago. And that's what most states are leaning towards, local market value. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, okay. Please.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Michael Barber. I represent CCC Information Services, which is a competitor of my good friend Diane's in doing automated repair estimates for vehicles and valuations for vehicles that have been involved in a total loss. And again, I am here also to only address Amendment A2 and not the basic bill. I think Diane has covered almost everything that I had wanted to say, and previously you heard from David Merritt when House Bill 2591 was heard several weeks ago. David Merritt, the general counsel of our company, also provided you with some written comments that included some information about the guidebooks and what we perceive to be some of their deficiencies. I think you have also previously heard Commissioner Ario speak here and talk about the need for transparency in the valuation of vehicles, as well as the fact that the state of Oregon has long had a local market regulation. We don't believe that the guidebooks provide transparency. They don't give you any idea of where their data comes from on which they base their values. Other than to say that they are the opinions of their editors. Of course, Diane has talked about the geographic scope of those books and that the 5-year limitation in the amendment would not cover most vehicles that are total losses. I guess one other final point, it was my understanding that Representative Buckley's constituent that he was trying to help here had a 21-year-old pickup truck, and certainly the proposed amendment would not have done anything to help that particular situation. With that, I'd be happy to take questions if you have any.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee?
I have another question for Mr. Miller. Sorry.
Representative Bonamici.
I'm trying to figure out the timing here, Sean, on the Angross bill, not the amendments.
Okay.
In lines 8 and 9, prior to providing a recommendation, the notice is given. So it's not given to everybody, or is it given to everybody?
Mr. Chairman,
Vice Chair Bonamici. Actually, the prior issue is, for instance, and the first statement, it could be, it says communicated in a statement substantially similar. So, for instance, if it's an email or it's over the phone, it's your first contact with the whoever's adjusting, you know, the accident. And at that statement, prior to them communicating that of whether they have a program or not, they have to inform that person of their rights. And so the first contact with, you first thing you do is call the 1-800 number, you're on the phone. The first thing they would have to do is essentially inform you of their rights as an insured, which is the statement in lines 14 through 16. They can then talk about their programs. Again, the bill doesn't gag us, and that was the big discussion in the Senate time, from talking about different programs that they may have, which, again, offer a lot of consumer benefits, such as, free rent-a-cars, things like that, that might be part of their program. If they accept one of those recommendations, then it goes to triggers the written notification, which is on the second.
I understand that, and I have another question about that. But the notice on the first page doesn't go to everybody. It only goes to the people when the insurance company is going to make a recommendation, correct? So not everybody gets the first notice. I'm just confirming.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I believe so, yes.
Okay. And then I'm baffled by the timing still of the second notice, because the second notice is triggered if the insured accepts the recommendation. So the insured has already accepted the recommendation and saying, okay, I've decided that I'm going to use shop A, and it's one of your recommended companies. Then within 3 business days, they get a notice saying, if you agree to use our recommended shop, you get this. So why doesn't the notice go before the person decides to use the recommended shop?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, I believe the notice of them understanding the law is in the first section, which is in lines 14 through 16. Again, I think that the proponents of the bill wanted this language even after they accept the recommendation. So, it's something we agreed to. I think the most important part of this bill is the first part, where the first contact them understanding their rights, because it is current law where they can go anywhere they want. And so I think that the statement before that is the statement that I think is the most important part of the bill. I think the advocates of the bill were pushing the second part of the bill, and it's something that we agreed to. I understand what you're saying. If they've already accepted a recommendation,
My point is just that it seems like the information in the second notice would be useful to the consumer in making the decision about whether to use a recommended shop. So I can't figure out why they're getting it 3 days after they already make that decision. That's my concern.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one small concern about this bill, and I wanted to talk about that. And it's in the same section, Section 1, Subsection 2. It says, prior to providing a recommendation. And it doesn't say how long before, and that concerns me. One of the things that was stated is that this kind of notice is given to the people when they get the insurance and when it's renewed. And the way I read this, this could almost be satisfied by that, because it simply says prior to providing a recommendation. And that concerns me some.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, if I can comment on that, I think the objective here is, if you are in an accident, and I think the insurance company would want to inform them of the recommendations, we cannot even do that until we inform them of their rights, which we would do right away.
Well, I understand. Follow up, please.
Follow up.
I understand that that's the intent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe the law is, as written, addresses that intent, because prior to making a recommendation is any time. You're about to make a recommendation, you're going to do this, that's the intent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have told the insured this when they bought the policy, that's prior to making a recommendation. And that's my concern, is that I don't think it's specific enough. I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of a stickler for detail.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, I think the key part, actually, is in this line 9 when it talks about the person adjusting the claim on behalf of the insurer. And so I think, and I do understand your concern. I think having language where you can maybe link it back to the initial policy, it's that person adjusting the claim. Thank you.
You're absolutely right. Thank you. I agree. Thank you, Sean.
Representative Nielsen, one more question.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. When you read, you know, the Oregon Revised Statute, the 746-280, I mean, it says exactly what we're just putting in this bill, so I don't even know why we're doing this. It says, an insurer shall not require that a particular person make the repairs to the insured's motor vehicle as a condition for recovery by the insured under a motor vehicle liability insurance policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, so why are we doing this again? It's already in here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nielsen, you're right. It is current law where it is the choice of anybody to go where they want. I think the advocates of the bill, and again, not to argue their point, but they wanted to strengthen the particular bill in order to make sure that the insurers understand their rights in probably the most, again, going back to Mr. Fuller's testimony, probably the most important time is when they're in that accident. I think that's the key part of the bill.
Representative Riley.
I'd like to respond to that question, if I might.
Please.
This bill has nothing, doesn't change current law about what is required. This law requires notification to the consumer of what's required. Mm-hmm. And consumers won't read this law book.
But it could be in their policy, right, Mr. Chair?
Notification could be in the policy, I suppose.
It could be. This is an additional communication, and I think from the standpoint of when this discussion was on the Senate side, additional communication, I think, only benefits the consumer.
Any other questions from the committee? Not seeing any further questions, I appreciate you coming forward, giving us your expertise, insight into this bill. It's been fascinating. And with that, is there anyone else that would wish to testify on Senate Bill 523A or the A2 amendment? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 523, and I'm going to carry over this bill until Wednesday, at which time we most probably will move it. And with seeing nothing else on our agenda, I am going to adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.
Thank you.